You are listening to KPOO San Francisco. We are back. This is Julie and Martin Matthews. You are listening to Reality Sandwich on 89.5 FM. Every Thursday at noon, we serve up a palatable taste of the truth on topics of the mind, body, and our planet. And today we have a wonderful guest on. I'm Julie Matthews, by the way, a certified nutrition consultant, and I'm really looking forward to having Gary Null on the show, who has been involved with the alternative medicine and nutrition field for decades now. And I'm here with my co-host,
Martin Matthews. I'm a certified clinical and medical hypnotherapist with Healthful Living.
And so let me just tell you a little bit about Gary for those of you who don't know. For over three decades, Gary Null has been one of the foremost advocates of alternative medicine and natural healing. Gary Null holds a PhD in human nutrition and public health science. He's a multi-award-winning journalist and New York Times bestselling author who's written over 70 books on nutrition, self-empowerment, and public health issues, including his most recent, Power Aging. His syndicated public radio show, Natural Living with Gary Null, is the longest-running, continuously aired health program in America for 27 years. He is also the author of the New York Times bestsellers Get Healthy Now and the Encyclopedia of Natural Healing. Time magazine called our guest the new Mr. Natural, and My Generation magazine dubbed him as one of the top health gurus in the United States. So we are looking forward to having Gary Null on shortly. He'll be with us in a minute, but until then, we wanted to tell you a little bit about him. 70 books, can you believe that?
70 books, Julie, with titles like Power Foods, Mind Power, The Complete Encyclopedia of Natural Healing, Power Aging, Guide to Loyal, Healthy Life, Joy of Juicing.
7 Steps for Overcoming Anxiety and Depression, 7 Steps for Overcoming Arthritis and Back Pain. I mean, he has a whole series of seven steps programs. The amount of time that it takes to put all these together is really amazing. He's very dedicated, and he has an entire staff of people helping him. We met him when we were in New York, and he has a health food store there, and he has dozens and dozens of DVDs out, several of which we've thoroughly enjoyed, in fact, had trouble putting down.
Well, tremendously very deep, full of information, and very investigative documentaries that he makes into really deep, important health subjects, and he's just so deeply committed to personal and natural health, and really uncovering truths in so many areas of our health and well-being, and has been doing this for years.
Yes, and I like the fact he called himself, I saw it on one of the websites, Nutrition and Health Sciences. I like that, Health Sciences, because it's bigger than just medicine or just nutrition. Health sciences involves, self-explanatorily,
the science of health.
So, I mean, that really, I love that term. It just really brought forward a good understanding of what he does. In terms of some of his DVDs, boy, we've seen quite a few of them. He's done a video called Gulf War Syndrome, and he got a bunch of awards for that film. He's done Drugging Our Children, of course, a topic that's near and dear to my heart, being that I work with so many children. Vaccine Nation, another one that's, I think, very insightful given the whole autism epidemic and everything. He has some great information on that. And again, he just has an unbelievable amount of information out there. He has a new DVD called Power Foods, which I'm really looking forward to getting a hold of. He looks like he brings on a bunch of different chefs and people that cook really good, healthy power foods, and I'm really looking forward to checking that out. And then he has a new DVD based on a book that I had read many years ago called The Food Mood Connection, and he has a DVD, The Food Mood Connection, and that looks really great as well. So he has been very busy over the last several decades here, putting together all sorts of valuable information for the public and people like you and I that are looking forward or looking in, interested in good health and information that can help further that for them.
And he speaks quite a bit about the nature of healthcare in America today, and has Definitely spoken about conventional medicine and how, you know, many systems are there in place to reinforce illness and disease, unfortunately, in our country, and that many natural solutions, natural approaches, have been intentionally suppressed in the mainstream and within the medical communities. And these are things that we talk about on our show here quite often. And, you know, I am just so delighted to connect with somebody who has been, you know, speaking this for so many years, living it is you know, it's like connecting in with the truth that's been standing for a long, long time, and especially in today's day and age when we're seeing so much illness in America and we're seeing so much, you know, use of pharmaceuticals for people to try to be healthy. It's great to connect with another major sojourner of truth and health.
And not only that, but he has the perspective of time. So to have done this field for 27, 30 years, something like that. You're talking that he was doing this, what, in the 70s? This is way before anybody got involved with any of this. For the most part, I mean, I remember a couple little health food stores in the 70s that my mom would go to and
right.
get some little, you know, bran in a little, you know, bulk bin or something like that. This is way back when a lot of these concepts were so new, and so it's going to be very interesting to kind of hear his perspective. He's running a little bit late because he's had a little family thing to work on, so we're waiting for him to come on the line. But
back in the 70s, if you wanted wheat bread, you had to go to a health food store, isn't that right?
I think so. I mean, I remember, but that's where my mom would get all of her kind of good things like that, prunes, or I mean, certainly you could buy some of them at the regular grocery store, but they were all packaged up and had, you know, different preservatives and things like that, and the health food stores didn't. Speaking of which, is a great he himself has a great health food store in Manhattan that we just happened upon, not even realizing he had it, on the way to his office one day, and it was a great place. We got all sorts of good things when we were there.
So, he, I mean, for one man to be having his, the influence that he's had, and certainly nationally, globally with all of his work, but then also very regionally in New York City. I mean, he is a New York City mainstay. He's on the radio there twice a week. His show is also broadcast by internet and satellite all around the world. And he's just, you know, his radio shows are not your typical radio show, nor is this one that you're listening to now, in that his inquiry is just, you know, deep and personal and passionate and meaningful and focusing on, you know, real information, real truth that can immediately have impact on people's lives when they take it in.
Well, you can tell that he's very passionate about the subject of health. He's been a consistent voice of how to live a longer, more vital life, embracing the mind, body, and spirit aspects of health. And, you know, he believes in much of what society he believes that, you know, while much of what society accepts as the inevitable markers of aging, he actually sees as more of a manifestation of preventable disease processes. And so he goes a lot into that, and his influence has really helped countless people help to see a really different perspective on the whole subject of health and nutrition. Of course, the key piece to all health, in our opinion, is the whole topic of good food and good nutrition.
Right. Well, I have to speak to him about his thoughts on the aging issue. Both, that's actually not the phone, but you know, the position on aging and nowadays with so many people. Our population is aging, of course, baby boomers nearing retirement and such, and there's all this frenzy in the media and amongst the minds of so many about how do we stave off aging? How do we, you know, it's like we have to fight this in some way. And I think it's really just a tremendous internal paradigm of how we perceive things.
Well, yeah, I don't, you know, I haven't read his latest book on power aging, but I do find it interesting that, you know, in general, we usually see aging as one of two things, as a disease, which I don't know, maybe he sees it that way, or as an inevitability. But to me, you know, there's a lot of gray area in between there that, of course, we're all going to age. We can't beat the aging process. Everybody eventually is going to get old. But at the same time, you know, we don't have to see it as something that just happens to us. We have some ability to see these breakdowns as an indication that we might be losing nutrients. All of the decades of what we've been doing with our health and our body maybe haven't been working for us. And the body starts to break down more so when it's had decades of time that the body hasn't replenished itself with what it needs. And by doing so, you can make a really big difference on somebody's, I was going to say outlook, but on somebody's, you know, future functioning. And it can really make a really, really profound difference. You know, we often don't think about that. We think, oh, you know, I have this ache and pain because I'm getting older. Well, yes. And how can you support your body so that it might not have that ache and pain or, you know, whatever. But there's a lot of room in the middle that we can actually make some changes and make some difference really in the world.
Right, right. And it's just a matter of, number one, adopting the correct mindset and belief that what we do impacts our health. And then actually learning the tools and the trades and the tips.
Well, I am looking forward to having him on. We are going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
You can't fool me. No, no.
We are back. This is Julian Martin Matthews on Reality Sandwich, and we are talking about Gary Nolan. Looking forward to having him on the show shortly. You know, for those people who have never, that don't know anything about him, if you've never seen or read any of his books, you know, you're going to find a lot of information online for his website. And you can find out more at GaryNull.com. And he actually has some really great, every week he has news items that come out and all sorts of, I think, really helpful information of things that are in the news. And so I just wanted to go through a couple of those with you because I think I find them so really interesting. You know, there's an article in here on, from Natural News, children, feds conclude, for the first time a branch of the U.S. government has admitted that the common industrial chemical bisphenol A, which is also known as BPA, may pose a health risk. And this is, I think, really important because we've been talking about these plastics and plastic chemicals for a long time on this show. And so it looks like the government is finally acknowledging some of what we already know. BPA is a crucial ingredient in the hard, clear polycarbonate plastics found in water bottles and baby bottles. And it has been used in liners for food and infant formula cans. It has been shown to seep out of the containers and into the food or liquid, and 90% of U.S. residents carry these chemicals in their body. And the National Toxicology Program of the National Institutes of Health concluded in April that there was some concern that BPA may cause problems in fetuses, babies, and children, including breast and prostate cancer, early onset of female puberty, attention deficit disorder, and other problems of the reproductive and neurological systems. This is really interesting that the National Toxicology Program of the NIH is actually talking about this. This is, I think, really important stuff. Some concern in the, you know, is just how these things can cause such a big problem for kids, but also families. And so they're saying that more research is needed to better understand BPA's implications in human health. But however, because of the effects in animals, that the it says, however, because these effects in animals occur at BPA exposure levels similar to those experienced by humans, the possibility that bisphenol A may alter human development cannot be dismissed. So this is just one of those areas when we look at something like autism and we say, and we try to say that autism is caused by vaccinations. It's not that simple, you know, or to say 100% of ADHD is caused by X. It just doesn't work that way, you know. So this is just an example of how this one chemical, bisphenol A, found in plastic bottles that are used in everything from baby bottles to liners of food containers to all sorts of things, that these can have big repercussions not only on fertility and miscarriages and really, you know, life-threatening things like that, but also just how is it affecting the day-to-day functioning of a system or of the endocrine system or of children and mm-hmm. all of these things. And so these are areas that we really need to look at. And so I really was excited to see that on Gary Null's website he had some recent information that had come out on the subject.
He's got a whole series of books, Seven Steps Health Programs, one called the Seven Steps to Perfect Health, the Practical and Affordable Guide to Health and Nutrition, Seven Steps to Overcoming African-American Health Problems.
Mm.
Seven Steps to Overcoming Anxiety and Depression. Hmm. Another book called Seven Steps to Overcoming Arthritis and Back Pain. How does one man do so much writing?
I don't know. We'll have to ask him. Yeah, I mean, as someone who's written a book, I know how long it takes to put something together. So it's really amazing. He's clearly a dedicated and passionate person and doing this for so long that he's had time to build up some of the information that he's been putting together over the years.
Well, we've been certainly building him up for the last 25 minutes, and I do hope that Gary gets a chance to call in. If not, if we end up not making it today, I'm sure we'll get a chance to reschedule. But one of the things we also definitely wanted to connect with Gary on, Julie, was he's working, as we know, for the, I think, quite a bit, about a year now under development, a documentary on autism. Mm. And when we were back in New York, you had the opportunity to sit down and do some interviewing with him on that, contributions to that. So I'm just curious what has been his perspective on the whole autism epidemic. Having been an observer of health and society over the past 30 years, what has he noticed, and what does he believe is going on? Mm. And what does he believe are you know, approaches to addressing it?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, I definitely think that it's really valuable to get somebody's perspective that's also been doing this for so many years. You know, it's one thing for any of us who have been doctors, nutrition consultants, normal citizens to have, you know, maybe been awakened and involved with this for 5-10 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's in 10 years, a lot has happened and has really woken up this industry. But imagine if you've been doing this for 30 years, how much you've seen and how much it's changed. So I'm really curious about that perspective and really looking forward to it. There was some other news that we actually had about the mercury amalgam fillings and all of that.
Oh, right. That's right. We just recently heard that. We caught a news piece that Norway and Sweden have both banned amalgam fillings.
Yes, yes. Interestingly, before these fillings were only banned for pregnant women and children.
High-risk people. Everybody else was deemed to be, you know, okay.
Right, and I have to say that even that is an improvement, mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. in our country, we don't have any warning against amalgam fillings. These are the mercury fillings, what they call the silver fillings. Any metal silver filling is actually a very high percentage mercury, and so we call them amalgam fillings. And so for a long time, those of us in the autism world, knowing how much mercury can poison and really injure a brain or a fetus or anybody, have really felt that these amalgam fillings can be dangerous. So it's interesting to see that in other cultures, in other countries, they actually have already had a ban for children and pregnant women, which I didn't know. And interestingly, these two countries, Norway and Sweden, are actually banning them altogether for the entire population.
And the article I was reading said that they've just essentially realized through the science and the observation of this whole thing that there is a danger.
Mm-hmm.
And it is not something that should be any longer tolerated in the aggregate of society. And apparently many other countries are following suit.
Yeah, I would agree. You know, I was reading actually on Gary's website a little bit about there's some mercury victory that happened here. You know, there was an announcement. It was announced that the Food and Drug Administration must now classify mercury fillings. And it goes into a suit of Moms Against Mercury and some things that they had a battle. And it was a successful end of a 10-year battle to get the FDA to comply with the law and set a date to classify mercury amalgams. So there are some new things going on, at least getting some awareness around these amalgams. I don't exactly know all of what this new information or ruling is going to allow for or apply to the laws or the dental industry. But I just think that anything in that understanding, because for a long time we've just seen amalgam fillings as not problematic at all, not at all. When we know that any trace amount of mercury is toxic, you know, these are the kinds of things that we should really be paying attention to. So give us one moment here and we will be right with you. Well, we are back on the line, and we are pleased to say that we do have Gary Null on the line with us, and we have been, even though he hasn't heard it, we have been talking all about his books, what he's been doing for the last 30 years in the world of health and nutrition, and so we are really thrilled to have Gary Null on the line with us today. Gary, are you there?
Yes, I am. Is this Julie?
This is Julie.
Julie, I thank you very much for this opportunity, and Martin, I appreciate very much that you've allowed me an opportunity to share some views.
Absolutely. You know, we've just been talking about that. The health in this kind of awakening to all of this health information in the public has really come about really enormously in the last 5 to 10 years. But you've been doing this for, I think, almost 30. And so I'm really looking forward to kind of getting your perspective of what you've seen change. And can you give us a sense of kind of what it was like when you started and how this information and subject of nutrition has changed over time?
Yes. When I first came in, I was very young. I was very fortunate. I had a book called The Complete Handbook of Nutrition, which became the number one selling book, health book in history and of the United States. And that was because I got a crossover bump. I was suddenly on Mike Douglas show, and then I was a regular on Mike Douglas show, and then on Johnny Carson and all the major networks. And I couldn't understand why I kept getting all these requests to be on television, radio, 2, 3, 4 a week. And it was because there was no one young, and I wasn't aware of that until the National Health Federation had a New York conference, and I was invited. I didn't know any of these people, but I went. And when I got there, I went into the room, the lounge where all the speakers, and there was Carlton Fredericks and Adele Davis and Gaylord Houser. To people in your audience who are a little older, these were the names in the world of health and nutrition. And some very nice people, but they were all old. And then when I had a chance to sit and talk with them, I saw that they were all smoking and drinking and eating, you know, white bread sandwiches, not everything. And I'm thinking, wow, what are they going to talk about? So they went out, and I'm listening, and I'm the last speaker. And I'm listening, and they're talking about fiber. You need 3 grams of fiber a day, and the American diet doesn't give anything. And I'm thinking, 3 grams of fiber, that's a tiny amount. So then Carlton Fredericks says you need a high-protein diet, but get your meat from hormone-free beef. And Adele Davis says you need 5 milligrams, which is a large amount, but 5 milligrams of the B-complex. And Gaylord Houser talking about how much water you should drink a day and how you should walk vigorously, and he was showing people the right way to walk vigorously and drink, and his clients to include Gloria Swanson, who would later become a friend of mine. So I'm listening to all these people, and then it came time for me, and I'm thinking, okay. I walked out on the stage, and there wasn't a person in that audience, I believe, was under 60. And a nice group of people, however, nice audience, and they were polite, but not enthusiastic. And then when I started talking, I said, well, I have a great deal of respect for what all these people have contributed, and because health has been kind of excluded. However, I'm a young guy. I'm only 20-something, and I'm taking a different approach in that I would like to see us prevent disease. And I believe that we can prevent disease if we do the following. And I laid out a vegetarian diet, exercise, stress management, and a whole lot of supplements no one had ever heard of in an amount that people thought were insane. I was suggesting 5,000 milligrams a day of vitamin C. They were suggesting 100 milligrams. They thought 100 milligrams of vitamin C was a big amount. And so afterwards, this man came over. His name was Clinton Miller. He's still alive today. And he said, Gary, understand something. If you want to have any career and last in this business, you better understand that, you know, don't be so radical. You know, everybody else here is loved and respected, and you're the new kid on the block. And I said, well, I'm sorry if my audience, you know, the audience didn't accept. They're not my audience, you know. I said, I want a different audience. I want a young and vital audience or an older and healthy audience. I didn't see a single person here was healthy, either the speakers or the audience. And I said, health shouldn't be about disease. Health should be about vitality, vitalism. Health should be about your whole attitude about life and your belief systems. Health is just not about a vitamin. And he says, didn't you see the audience wasn't connecting with you? Didn't you see people getting up and leaving? Didn't you see that nobody applauded you at the end? I said, yes, I did. And I said, and tell me, Mr. Miller, should I have compromised just so I got the audience's approval? Then I'd be a politician, compromising and having no soul.
Right.
And lying about everything just to make sure that you got everyone's vote and then did whatever you wanted irrespective. I said, so I'll do this. I'll have a very short career. I'll be a one-book wonder, and I'll go away, and nothing has to change. Or maybe there is an audience out there for me, and there'll be a different health movement, and it'll be unique and exclusive and completely separate from this one. I can't adapt myself to what I heard and saw. And I wouldn't expect them to change for anything I'm advocating because I'm young and naive and inexperienced. And they're older and wiser. So I respect who they are. And now I have to create, you know, a different concept. And he said, well, good luck. This was the same Clinton Miller who 5 years later would call me. He'd say, Gary, remember me, Clinton Miller? I says, yes, Clinton, I remember you. He says, hey, he says, can you help us out here? We're doing a big conference in Asbury Park at the convention center, and ticket sales are real slow. And we got all the best speakers, same people, by the way, before, Carlton Fredrickson. He said, but we only have about 100 people signed up. Could you come and be our co-host with Carlton Fredrickson? I said, well, why would you want me out there? I was told that I was kind of persona non grata. He said, well, you know, we heard you got this humongous audience over in WMCA radio. So I said, well, if I can help you, I will. So I promoted the event, and 1,600 people went out and signed up for a weekend and was there. And
wow.
I went out.
Wow.
And what was interesting, absolutely nothing had changed. The same tired old stale messages about eat your bread. It wasn't about eat whole wheat bread. It was eat your bread so you get a little fiber. And I'm thinking, my God, I'm in one of the most unusual positions. I'm watching people who have a paradigm and live through it, and successfully, and have been loved and respected for it, but their day is gone. And those are the mustache peeps. They're gone. And what I saw from them was there was no one else in the field. So for 20 years, there was no one else advocating in any major way, on a daily, certainly not on a daily basis, not on ABC Network and the other place I was. And so what I did is I started to do a group of health support groups to prove, because the argument was always this, well, it's all anecdotal. So if someone gets better taking homeopathy or, you know, eating sprouts, it's just anecdotal, it's not proof. So I started to do a group of studies, clinical studies, scientifically produced and medically monitored. And then I would take a group of people. I would take a group of people, for example, who had arthritis. They had to have proof of arthritis. Then after the study of 3 months, meeting once a week with them and changing their diet, getting everything that created inflammation, caffeine and fried food and meat and artificial sweeteners and canned food, and eating grains and nuts and seeds and legumes and beans and vegetables and tubers and taking vitamins. Was there a difference? And then we started seeing remarkably statistically significant differences. So we started to do it with everything. Menopause, we reversed menopause. Alzheimer's, improved Alzheimer's, reversed end-stage Alzheimer's. Parkinson's, reversed it. All these things that we needed to deal with, we dealt with.
Wow.
So we were reversing diseases and publishing the articles and then presenting them. Now, that's something no one in the health field had done before. The only person who had done this, but he wasn't in the health field, was Dr. Dean Ornish, a great man, who showed that with a vegetarian diet, supplements, stress management, and exercises, you could improve or reverse atherosclerosis. And he published in the British Medical Journal, The Lancet, and the New England Journal of Medicine. But lo and behold, after going on national tours, having a best-selling book, and after having a lot of media, nothing changed. It was like 720,000 doctors said, well, prove to us that this diet will work. Prove to us and publish in a scientific journal. Prove and do it at a major institution. He did it twice. So it showed me another lesson. The lesson is people who say show me the truth frequently will not do anything when they do see the truth.
That's a really very good point.
And how can you go to a holistic doctor if you're not going to be willing to be a holistic patient? And so a whole new group of doctors sprouted up. And these doctors called themselves complementary or holistic. What were they? They were opportunists. Now, granted, they were all orthodox trained and all went through the same process. Most were board certified. But now they started doing chelation therapy, or they would do a vitamin drip, or they would do maybe homeopathy. But they weren't inclusive. So there was no comprehensive medical practice in the United States, not one. And none of them used the spirituality process. Later, there would be some that would incorporate spirituality, Dr. Moss and a few others, But by and large, Gabriel Cousins did. But by and large, most only dealt with, well, if you come into them, your problem better be something that chelation can help. Otherwise, you're not going to get help. So then patients were confused, and no one was proving that the therapy they were using was scientifically based. So once again, we went through and we started to verify which therapies in all of alternative medicine work and which don't. And we found that all had some benefit, but none were so comprehensive that they really helped in a major way.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we found was missing, and what I've been advocating, is inclusiveness, comprehensiveness. So therefore, don't just think you're doing something healthy because you take a vitamin or you're starting to have, you know, more salads. That's fine, but that's one tiny piece of a puzzle that has at least 100 pieces to it. And that's why when people try macrobiotics, all right, macrobiotics is okay. It's one piece. Raw foods, one piece. Mm. Living foods, one piece. Enzyme therapy, juice therapy, colonics, massage, Feldenkrais, acupuncture, one piece.
Mm-hmm.
So then what about spirituality? That's a big piece. What about your belief system? Even a bigger piece. What about exercise, quality of life, and the environment you live in? Also important pieces. Mm. Quality of your relationships and being able to deal with stress properly. Important pieces. So then one day you realize for the few percentage of people, about 5% willing to say, hey, whatever it takes to be healthy, I'm willing to commit myself to because I see the rewards. No disease, maximal wellness, happiness, and joy, and health. Mm. It's worth it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, 5% of the American population is 15 million people. That's a lot of people.
Wow.
Yet 95% are unhealthy and choose unhealthy lifestyles. Mm-hmm. No one is stupid when they go into a McDonald's or a Burger King and say, I want a, you know, a, that hamburger and all that sodium. But it's a stupid choice. So we must distinguish the difference between people being able to make a good choice from a bad choice and the consequences from it.
Right.
So smart people, good people, make stupid and bad choices every day. And then one day when they say, oh, my God, I've got diabetes or neuropathy, I've got a gangrene toe, they're amputating my leg, they're putting in a stent, I got balloon angioplasty, oh, my goodness, I've been depressed, and they're giving me Paxil, Prozac, Zoloft, Effexor, and, oh, I'm thinking about suicidal ideation, my kid is on IDD drugs, Ritalin, kitty cocaine. And you stop and think, hold on a second. This is all just one big game.
Mm.
Just stop everything and ask. 150 years ago, 250 years ago, 300 years ago, the average American didn't have Prozac, Paxil, cell phones, blueberries, blackberries, raspberries, or strawberries. Right? They had a life.
Mm.
Now, how in the world can we not understand that the purpose of life is to live it with some meaning and dignity and not make our disease, our problems, our emotions, or our entitlement needs more significant than who we are as human beings?
Mm.
Right.
And if you think that we are any smarter today, then you go back and you'd get the writings of Thomas Jefferson, Thomas Paine, Benjamin Franklin, John Hancock, and you show me five people today who could be as articulate and his understanding of the human condition is they.
Mm.
Well, we're fortunate to be speaking to one now and have you on the line. And we thank you so much. And due to our abbreviated show today, we're going to have to just jump kind of right into what we really want to kind of tear into a little bit here right now. Just following on right on from the subject, you know, as far as the health of our society and the aggregate perceiving things one way and a small group of people, and I'm speaking now of the autism epidemic, a small group beginning to view it a more holistic way, broader way, and actually helping. I wanted to ask you, I know you're working on an autism documentary now. What have you been seeing and learning about the autism epidemic, and what's your take on addressing it?
It started 7.5 years ago when I was challenged by a physician on my radio program that when I suggested to a person who had called in earlier in the show, that who asked about their kid getting a whole series of vaccines all at once, right after birth, I said, before you allow that, simply ask the hospital or the physicians, can they show you from peer-reviewed literature, double-blind, placebo-controlled, randomized studies, the gold standard of science, that those are safe and effective for your child? And this doctor called in and says, that's irresponsible. Vaccines are known to be safe and known to be effective, and you are a nut, and you're irresponsible because that could... And I said, well, you have a right to your opinion, but here's what I'm asking you. show me the studies that any given vaccine has been put to a double-blind study. Can you show me the studies? As a PhD in public health science and human nutrition, as a professor from Fairleigh Dickinson University in graduate science, as a research director of the Institute of Applied Biology, and a scientist for the last 30 years, I understand the principles of science and public health. So I'm asking a simple question. Can you cite me any studies that show that the manner in which the vaccines are given, the number that they are given, is backed by any science?
Mm.
And the man hung up on me. So then after the show, I decided to do an in-depth analysis, and I did. And I find I could not find any such studies. But I could find dozens of studies that showed the incidence of negative reactions, including death. And that led me to 7 years of doing research on the science and efficacy and safety of vaccines.
Wow. And we saw your movie Vaccine Nation, which is excellent also.
And then from that, one of the subgroups of individuals who were adversely affected by vaccines were children diagnosed with autism.
Mm.
And then when I took a look at all the literature, I found that the autistic child is the canary in the coal mine, that the mother could have genetic predisposition in no small measure because of her own biochemistry, including the biochemistry that a mother can pass on in her genes, human herpes 6. She can pass on lead, cadmium, and mercury. And mercury is a neurotoxin.
Mm.
So now I started looking at what we haven't told the public about what is in vaccines and then what happens to the autistic child. Now, I interviewed hundreds and hundreds of children and their parents for my documentary, and we're finished. It's in post-production. It'll be out in about 2 months.
Mm.
And in it, we found that parents said, my kid was completely normal. And then they went in, got these 7 shots, and then couldn't speak, was inconsolably crying, could only grunt. And then they were we were told, well, your kid has these problems. And everything began to fit a pattern. In other words, you look for patterns in science, not the single anomaly. And I'm talking about if you interviewed 1,000 of the hundreds of thousands of children's parents who have autism, you would see that 90% of their stories were identical. So then I started to see, all right, what is being done? And the orthodox approach to helping a child with autism is abysmal.
Mm.
And the final stage came when a woman contacted me, her and her husband, and their name are Artigas. They're both New York City police officers. And their child had been normal until 2.5, got the vaccines, and then couldn't talk thereafter until I put him on a protocol. Now, within a few days of me putting him on a protocol, he uttered his first words, as if a door opened, and he was able to come out. Then he's been developing ever since, till now. He is now in a regular school at the top of his class, and we just finished filming him last week, playing the piano, the guitar, speaking, cooking a meal, having friends, none of which he was able to do before.
Mm.
In fact, the reason they called me is the psychiatrist had him on 4 psychiatric drugs, and because he was acting out and making suicidal threats, and he was too big at his age as a teenager to be restrained, they were going to put him in an institution.
Mm.
And so she found out that once they go in these institutions, they don't live long, and they're medicated nonstop, and they have no life at all. It's like it's a terrible concept. It's one of these dirty hidden secrets in America.
Mm.
What do we do with the tens of thousands of kids that are too big to be kept at home and cared for 24/7? And when they go in these institutions, you might as well just realize you just put them into a psych ward with no chance of ever getting out, and none ever get out unless they die and they don't live long. So she was terrified of this, and that's when she called me. Well, the good news is, 4 weeks ago in Washington, D.C., at the World Congress on Anti-Aging Conference's local meeting, about 2,000 scientists saw this young boy, Jonathan Ortega, get up on a stage, 11 years old, and tell his story, how he was outstanding student of the week, articulate conversation, no autism whatsoever. His doctor and his neurologist and psychiatrist now have him off all medications. He's normal. His parents told the story of what it's like to live with a kid 24/7, where when you take your eye off of them, suddenly they can do something to themselves or others, and the frustration they live with by not having the medical model help them. Now they realize there's treatment. Well, there are thousand, at least a thousand other kids in the United States right now who've made major improvement or are completely normal. I filmed over 400 of these kids in one afternoon 2 months ago in Chicago with 1,400 families of autistic children. Mm. And the parents and the children all said the same thing. The natural and non-toxic therapies are so far ahead of the curve that the medical establishment isn't even at the concept of understanding what caused their autism,
right,
let alone natural therapies. They are in one respect like Carlton Fredericks was with 3 milligrams of fiber and Adele Davis with 5 milligrams of B-complex. We're giving these children 1,000 micrograms of cobalamin, which is vitamin B12, or methylated folic acid, plus 5 cc's of glutathione, intravenous. We're giving them chelation to get rid of the heavy metals. Their heavy metal of mercury goes off the chart. We're cleaning up their GI tract because all of them are having problems with gastrointestinal disturbances.
Mm-hmm.
Their immune system is defective there, so we clean that GI tract up using glutamine and other nutrients and acidophilus. We are rebuilding a lot of the neurological structure in the brain with acetylcholine and glycerol phosphocholine and a lot of other nutrients that the average person would know about, and in amounts that are that you have to do it one at a time, meaning each person has different modalities that you work on. But we're seeing that by having people and the doctors who are out there who know what they're doing, they're approaching this as if you're decontaminating an environmental toxic dump site. So that you're having to go into this child's system and you're having to take the toxins out and then repair the damage to the hormonal system, gastrointestinal system, the neurological system. But the good news is that there's not just one or two. There are dozens of physicians, dozens of scientists, hundreds of thousands of parents who can now say, my child has a chance at a normal life.
Mm.
And none of that is being done by the Orthodox medical establishment.
Right, right. Well,
none of it.
I'm so glad that you're putting these stories together, because those of us like myself that have been in the autism world for a long time and working on the gut and working on the food that they're eating and seeing kids get better and hearing countless stories from parents of how all of these different therapies have been so helpful. But then you always get that that perspective of, well, is there a double-blind placebo-controlled study for every single one of these things that you're thinking of? And, of course, there isn't yet at this point, and there's so much complexity that I think that seeing the power of the stories of the families that get better is right now one of the most powerful things, because you can really see.
Let me just interrupt 1 second. In Washington, D.C., the scientists in the audience were texting the stage with their comments, giving it to the narrator.
Mm-hmm.
The very first question was, can you show us one single cell that you have been able to genetically modify to make it healthier? And I said, hello. I said, here's 100 trillion cells that have been modified, and you have a whole human being who's out of autism.
Mm.
Does that count for anything? I said, you know, the difference is you all but want to be rewarded hanging out in your ivory towers, doing your stem cell research, looking for the magic panacea to change one of the symptoms of a person with autism so you can get a Nobel Prize or make yourself some money.
Mm-hmm.
Here is a kid that free of charge, because I've never charged for any of the 65,000 people I've counseled, free of charge is completely well.
Mm.
So you're like, you know what I feel like right now? I feel like the entire arena is filled, the whole stadium is filled with doubting Thomases while Bannister runs the sub-4-minute mile.
Mm-hmm.
And they're saying, but it can't be done. And Bannister's saying, look at the clock, I just did it.
Right.
They're saying, but it can't be done. Our theory says it can't be done. Our philosophy can't be done. Our math said it can't be done. Our body politics says, the AMA said it can't be done. And Bannister said, friends, I just ran a sub-4-minute mile. I broke world history. Now we're at this crucial junction. Either you trust what you see and I just did, or you trust your dogma and your belief.
Mm-hmm.
And 99% of science and medicine is so closed, so anal, so corrupt, so philosophically abnormal that it's not willing to, in any level, at any way, acknowledge the reality of truth on the ground. So the patient today, if they're healthy and happy and being improved, are of no significance to the pharmaceutical medical model paradigm. And hence, anyone who's making improvements are like Bannister breaking the 4-minute mile and everyone watching and saying, but you can't do it.
Right.
And he said, but I just did it.
Wow.
And it is happening, and people are getting better. And we want to thank you so, so much for sharing your perspective.
We have the power on our side.
We
feel because of a minority of people who've made positive changes don't have power. You have the power to voice your concerns. And there's growing numbers. There's hundreds of thousands of people under the radar who are coming around to realizing that the medical model is good in some areas and grossly biased and flawed in others.
Right.
Nothing more powerful than the truth.
That's right. Well, Gary, it's been so wonderful to have you on and share your perspective, and we're really looking forward to your new film coming out. And thank you so much.
Thank you all very much.
So, GaryNull.com. You can find out more information there. Well, that was such a pleasure to have him on. You are listening to KPOO San Francisco 89.5 FM. We need to run. You can get this show and all past shows at RealitySandwichRadio.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned next week.
We'll be back next week.
Remember, as Martin would say,
all change begins with you.
You tell me it's not about color, still you refuse to take the picture off the wall.